Almost everyone's question to me was, "How are you doing, Pete?" It was a difficult question to answer. One moment I was okay, and the next I was in agony. In order to respond honestly, I began to give this answer. I have two responses to your question. The first is, I am a little better. The second is, I don't know how I'm doing. I've never been here before. I've discovered that everyone grieves differently, so there are no standards or boundaries to tell you where you are in the recovery process. You simply keep moving forward with the tasks that are in front of you. No one saw Harriet's suicide coming. 2 nights before her death, she wrote an email to a friend in which she admitted that she was struggling with doubt, but believed she was turning the corner. She even had an affirming conversation with her spiritual mentor the night before she took her life. To all who knew Harriet, loved her, and needed her, Harriet's suicide made little sense. The immediate clinical cause, I believe, was clear. Her death was precipitated by a combination of new medications not providing the needed base of coverage, as doctors described it, which meant the old medicines had lost their effectiveness before the new ones had developed strength in her system. This imbalance resulted in tremendous highs and lows of both anxiety and depression in her last days. The doctors did the best they could do. Everyone thought she would make it. But I searched for deeper answers than these clinical explanations provided. I could not sleep. I kept going over the last days of her life, how the tragedy happened, why it happened, and what could have been different. Harriet could have found a way of escape on that fateful day. There are several possible sources she could have turned to. I was nearby. Some dear friends who nurtured and embraced her with unconditional love had planned to spend the afternoon with us. She could have waited for their support before plunging into fatal despair. In addition, she had time to consider the irrevocable act during the 20-minute drive to the gun shop and the discussion she had with the store clerk. Why didn't Harriet reach out for these lifelines? It's a question I've asked myself time and time again. I am certain that on that day she did not have full mental control. Her mind was saturated with the darkness of her depression, which smothered her capacity to reason. And certainly Satan, the dark enemy of our souls, was taking every advantage of Harriet's weakness. I was left with resounding questions. How do I understand Harriet's death? Who and what are responsible? Where is God in all this? Driven by the insatiable desire to understand Harriet's death, I read widely in the scriptures and pored over books about heaven, angels, near-death experiences, and grief. I endured long days and nights of soul-searching and coping with pain. One of my most urgent questions centered on the fact that Harriet took her own life. For many Christians, there is a stigma attached to suicide. Taking one's own life is considered to be one of the most grievous of sins, unforgivable in the minds of many. I could not let the question rest. I dug into the Bible for answers. My study of the Bible made it clear that suicide is not an option for anyone, especially a Christian, to use as the way out of a problem. Among the Ten Commandments that God gave Moses was, "You shall not murder," Exodus chapter 20, verse 13. This principle applies to suicide because suicide is self-murder. Murder destroys what God has created. His reason for this command went much deeper than simply to provide stability in a civil society. It is much more sacred. God reminded Noah that the life of a person reflects God.